Welcome back to the Content That Grows podcast. Today, I am excited to be joined by Amanda Natividad. She is a VP of Marketing for audience research startup SparkToro. She's also a contributor for Adweek, a Le Cordon Bleu trained chef, and a former journalist. Amanda previously led marketing for Growth Machine, led marketing for Liftopia, built Fitbit's B2B content program, and led content communications for NatureBox. So from this, you can tell why we're excited to be chatting today. There's a lot of history, a lot of context, a lot of different perspectives around content. And so we are going to be talking about high quality content marketing and some of the aspects there. So excited to have you with us today, Amanda.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nate. Looking forward to this.
Yes, me too. And for anyone who has listened before or maybe potentially from the beginning, Rand Fishkin, CEO of SparkToro, was the first guest on the podcast. So I'm excited to have you here with us today and just kind of give me a bit of a full circle and be able to chat about some different stuff. So with that, kind of jumping in, I think that the phrase high quality content is used a lot. A lot of people talk about it, including myself. And so I wanted to just kind of start by understanding, like, what does that mean to you when someone says high quality content or when you say that? And how does that impact your approach overall to content at SparkToro?
Yeah, so I'm glad that we're hearing more about high quality content,
sure.
Right? It's something that I've kind of had a chip on my shoulder about for the past, you know, several years of content marketing. Yep. And I think I would say at the outset, there's the inherent challenge of high quality content in that, what does that mean, right? Because for a lot of people, that means a lot of different things. Yep. And it's because when you're getting into quality content, there are fewer agreed upon KPIs, right? Like usually for content marketing, the KPIs you look at are like, you know, keyword rank, search rank, page views, those things you can all measure. Everybody knows what they are. But when you think about quality, not everyone agrees on what that is. And I think that's where we are today with content marketing is we're at a really interesting point where all of us content marketers are going to need to be challenged with creating higher quality content, right? There's more content than there ever was before. There's, you know, sort of the rise of generative AI. People are kind of scared about that. So I think it's interesting where we are with high quality content. The other thing I'll say, so with regards to SparkToro, I mean, I would also say that high quality content is, it kind of is our marketing strategy.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it is because we're a company of three. It's really just three of us employees. It's Rand, Casey, and I. And so what we each bring to the table is we each bring like at least a decade of experience in marketing. For Casey, if it's marketing plus technology.
Right.
Right. For Rand, it's marketing plus being a CEO. For me, it's marketing. A lot of marketing. So everything we do, we take through that lens of, is this high quality? Like, should this come from us and not someone else? Why are we saying this and not someone else? And I think those are some of the same sort of frameworks or heuristics that any content marketer can use, right? Like, why is my company having this point of view and not somebody else's? Why should someone listen to me and not my competitor? So really homing in on, you know, your unique value proposition, what you uniquely bring to the table, and how that informs your content marketing efforts.
Yeah, and I like what you just said there because certainly first early on you mentioned it's harder to measure. I agree. Overall agree. Great to have that trend and people wanting to focus there more. And so I think with that, you know, you mentioned some of the SEO metrics. And so there is obviously from content-led SEO perspective, you know, that still for a lot of companies is a big piece of the content puzzle for them. Within, you know, Google and some of the guidelines around EAT and which, you know, expertise, authority, trust, like there's, that I think is a very good guiding principle. I mean, if you're looking purely from SEO, you may be, folks may be thinking like, well, how do I just make some tweaks and sort of game this to like make Google think I have the expertise on this topic, but really what you're saying, one thing you mentioned was like, should this even come from us? Like, are we the ones that should write about that? And I think that's mm-hmm. what is so powerful about, you know, EAT and some of that is that it's really trying to make sure that, that companies are, you know, not just companies, any sites are focusing on the things that they actually do have expertise and it should be the content coming from them, which right. I think is a great guiding principle. Yeah.
Yeah. And I want to add on to that, because what I really appreciate about that point is that distinction between EAT and what your company should be doing, right? A good example for Spectoro is Rand is obviously, you know, one of the most well-known people, if not the most well-known person in the field of SEO.
Yeah.
However, more realistically, or, you know, currently, he hasn't worked in SEO in, maybe like 5 years now. So should Spectoro be creating content about SEO? Right? You could take that perspective of, but because you had that existing expertise, you should. But, you know, where we don't is Spectoro is not an SEO tool. We don't provide SEO services, and therefore it shouldn't come from us.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, I think it's a great point to add on. And so I think that dovetails really well into the next thing I want to talk about, which is, you know, just would love to understand some of the things that you and the team have had to say no to in order to focus on keeping quality high. You know, I think that's, you mentioned it's a team of three. So inevitably that is a bandwidth thing right from the start. I would just love to know, in order to stay focused and keep quality high, what are some things you've said no to?
So there are a couple of, you know, sort of, there are a couple of broadly applicable frameworks that we think of, right? Like, so there are things like, does something scale? Is this in service to our customers? If the answers to that are no, then it's a no for us. And I think most people can take something from that. Mm-hmm. But more specifically, to give you a really concrete example, something we recently said no to was our own podcast. So last year we started recording a podcast, just me and Rand, and we were thinking about like this should theoretically be easy for us. Like, he and I are used to speaking off the cuff. Yeah. We enjoy talking to each other. So great, let's make a podcast out of it. But when it came into practice, like actually executing upon it, then it became, okay, we got to schedule time together, a time that works well for both of us, where we are both at our desks in our proper sort of mic setups and camera setups. We have to make sure we have a really good topic, right? Because we didn't want to, for us, you know, personally, we didn't want to do the kind of podcast where we're just sort of riffing on marketing things. We really wanted to home in on topics that are really important to us, whether it's core to Spectoro's mission or something we are each personally invested in that we really care deeply about. So then it became, well, we got to make sure we have a really good episode. What are some topics we can talk about? And then it became, now we have to plan for this. Mm-hmm. And then when it got to post-production, it was, all right, we need to edit this. Which parts are we going to take out? We really want this to be a truly good use of people's time. So we recorded, I think, about 4 episodes. And like for each one, we actually recorded for about an hour, but we wanted the episode to be 30 minutes. So then it was, okay, got to make notes on the most salient parts, the best parts, make sure it's edited really well. Mm-hmm. And then came to working hands-on with some editors and having a really hard time finding the right editor fit, right? Because, I mean, you know firsthand, editing is expensive. And it should be, right? It's a lot of work. So when it just came down to it in practice, it was a lot of work for us to produce a podcast, and it was really expensive. And so then it became, should we keep doing this? Is this a good use of our time, resources, and money? I'm not sure that it is. And, you know, it was fun to do, but I think in the end, it just didn't really make sense for the bandwidth that we had.
Yeah, that's a great example. I'm sure our editor, will enjoy going through this episode and, and editing that part and hearing the acknowledgement of that aspect of it. But yes, overall, completely understand the setup. And like I, you know, mentioned, like, I'm just not at home, I'm traveling. And so even just before getting started, like, do I actually have everything? There is that additional mental tax. And if anyone's been following our podcast for a while, they know we started out exclusively with guests. Then we went 100% away from guests and did everything internally. And now we're back to a mix, and has been a bit of a learning process on the fly of what is the narrative, what is the planning process, where do we get the most value, all that stuff. So agree on the complexity there. And I think that what I really admire about SparkTour overall, and then obviously there are three of you, so you as individuals, is there's such a trap for many folks that you could have very easily said, well, let's hire someone to run a podcast. And, you know, you could be adding more and more things to your content strategy because you would like to do them, and therefore building the team and resources. And there is, I think, the power in saying no to things and really staying focused and knowing what you do. Because from my perspective, you still do a lot of content. So it doesn't even necessarily mean that you're saying no to a lot of stuff and being extremely focused. And so I think that's cool. I would love to also just kind of understand, perhaps you have a bit of a framework or a workflow that, you know, we have this one core idea, we start with this, and we know that it will turn into office hours and a blog post and et cetera, et cetera. Like, maybe you have that. I don't know if there's anything you could share there about even just sort of that mechanism of how you keep the quality of the content high while still putting out quite a bit.
Yeah. So, I guess we think about it in a number of ways, right? A lot of our content, I guess the first thing I would say is that all of our content serves at least double duty. Like,
yeah,
a webinar might actually be a presentation that we continue to refine, and it's something one of us presents at a conference. So that's one. So that's one example of a piece of content being used a couple of times. Or sometimes a webinar is turned into a blog post, or vice versa, right? So everything that we do has multiple purposes, multiple use cases. And with each use case, it's continually refined, right? So it's not like, great, the webinar is done, let's take the transcript and make it and refine it a little bit and turn it into a podcast. It becomes, great, that webinar went pretty well. We had a bunch of questions about some of these specific areas, which really indicated that some of these ideas were not concrete enough. There weren't enough good examples, but that's great. It's great to get that feedback. Now we have the opportunity to make this better. So if you were to go through some of our past office hours webinars, and the one in particular I'm thinking about is one that I did on cold outreach. This, I think it was last year. I had the presentation structured in a specific way, and I stand by the overall ideas, but as I was getting some of the real-time feedback and even thinking about how I was presenting the ideas, when it came time to put it into writing, I was realizing there were areas where how I had phrased something originally didn't make sense. So I thought, like, oh, I have to rewrite that. Like, I shouldn't call it that. I should call it something else. So if you were to go through both, you would see these differences. And I think this is something that more people should do, right? Like, continue to kind of iterate from that real-time feedback that you're getting. And feedback, you know, comes in the form of questions, maybe people raising their eyebrows, if you can see them on video.
Yeah.
You know, people adding on their own ideas, right? And you can go, great, like, we got some extra ideas from the 10-speed community. Like, we'll add these on. Yeah. So using all these opportunities to continue to refine and harden your ideas.
Yeah, I love that. So transitioning real quick, content marketing is a very broad discipline at this point, across many different, you know, content types and formats. So like webinars, you know, virtual events types of things are part of that. So you mentioned office hours being sort of your webinar format. So I'd love to just kind of understand how you view, whether it's specifically to you or just in general, you know, webinars and virtual events in the context of a content strategy, and go from there. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, webinars are still a really great way to, you know, capture a couple of marketing goals under one, you know, one sort of umbrella program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it helps you with some of the top of funnel awareness, helps you generate leads, and then, of course, helps make your content more efficient. So really taking advantage of all those opportunities makes webinars a really obvious place to continue to grow or strengthen your content strategy. For us at SparkToro, we, you know, we use these webinars to power the rest of what we do. So whether that's turning a webinar into a blog post or using the opportunity to really talk to customers at scale, like going through a bunch of specific SparkToro use cases, examples, some case studies, and giving people more ideas for how to get more use out of the tool, like then that's a product marketing function or, you know, sort of user retention function. Other opportunities too are really good co-marketing ones, right? So sometimes we'll have some guest speakers, we'll share the lead list, or hopefully give them some love to help grow their business, right? And hopefully it comes back to us too, right? Sure. So we think about those kinds of things too. And then overall, like getting practice, right? Getting practice for bigger scale events. So Rand and I will do this pretty often. Like we'll take an idea that we've been working on. Maybe we've presented it elsewhere at a smaller webinar, or maybe not, maybe it's brand new. And then we take that and we bring it to our SparkToro community. And, you know, it's our community, right? So we know how they're going to be. We know they're super supportive, they're kind, that they will give us great feedback, and that we'll continue to make the presentation better. And then using that to make that presentation better, and then taking it to maybe an in-person conference or some other kind of event like that.
Yeah, that's great. And I'd love to maybe just have you add on then, as you know, one final point, just about how you keep, let me give an example first and then I'll ask the question. When I hear webinars, and just from the amount of SaaS companies I've worked with, or at least, you know, evaluated in some way, they tend to feel like we got on this treadmill, similar to, you know, any other content or like a thing you do that you get success, paid search, whatever it might be. You get on this, it worked, you generated some leads, and now you feel like you're on this treadmill or hamster wheel or whatever you want to call to keep doing them, to like keep hitting those lead numbers so your lead numbers don't go down or whatever it might be. And I think that it suffers then because then it sort of shifts into like this obligation, and not something that was really like intentional from the start. And so I would love to understand how you think about like remaining thoughtful about a webinar strategy or virtual event strategy and making sure that it's staying aligned with the overall strategy. So maybe you just answered that in the prior, but I would love to just maybe hit on that a little bit more and see if you have anything else to add.
I think I have probably two different answers for this. The first one is my preferred answer, which everybody will hate, which is it fun? Like that's honestly how I go about most of my job today. Like, is the thing fun to do? Like, am I having fun crafting this email promotion? Or am I having fun developing the content for this webinar? And by fun, I mean, am I in some kind of state of flow as I create this? Like, am I learning some new ideas? Am I testing new ideas? Am I working from a place of original thought? Like, those things are fun to me. And I think those are the things that point to high quality content, right? That shows that I understand my audience, that shows that I respect my audience, and that hopefully my audience will notice and take note of and be like, oh, this is great. I really want to attend these office hours. Like, it looks, I don't think anyone thinks of it like this, but I don't think anyone, or meaning like, I don't think anyone sees my marketing emails and goes, oh, she's having fun with this, I'm going to attend, right?
Right.
I think, but what I think they pick up on is, oh, there's a lot of love and thought and care put into this email. Like, this person or this team gives it. And this is going to be really interesting. And so I think that's how I think about fun and flow, right? So that's kind of the first piece. The second piece, which is, I think, probably the preferred answer of most businesses or most executives, right? Which is it effective? Like, does it have an impact on the bottom line?
Right.
Now, I don't know if, like, every single office hours, like, I don't know which one drove which specific customer to make this specific purchase? I don't know. Right. And I don't think that's worth getting into or diving into at a super granular level, because I just don't think that's a good use of anybody's time, not right. just mine. However, what I can tell you is that our webinars, you know, get us at this point, I'll speak for the last several webinars that we did. They get about 1,000 signups. Not all of them are brand new people, but some of them are. A lot of them will convert to become newsletter subscribers. They'll also become customers. And then along the way, as I develop relationships with customers where people are writing into us, asking questions, I'll mm-hmm. look up, you know, where at what point they joined our email list. Mm-hmm. And I can glean from there, like, oh, this person joined office hours. And then they manually went to our newsletter sign-up page and signed up there. And they've been getting to know us there. And then at some point in the last month, they became a customer. I don't know if the webinar converted them or the newsletter converted them, but clearly these things are making an impact, right? Because mm-hmm. if they didn't become a customer or if they weren't reading this stuff, like I wouldn't see any of these through lines. So
right.
I guess what I would say is, more broadly, do these things track? Like, are you getting regular engagement? Are you getting some kind of regular signups? Are you getting some kind of measurable growth?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think that falls in line very much with how we view things as well. I mean, just similar podcast, newsletter, time we spend on LinkedIn content, some of that it comes through, you know, in how did you hear about us? It comes through in, you know, we see the newsletter sign up prior to anything else, but not really a need for us to try to needle in and understand, you know, how do we give credit to the last touch, you know, the prior, any of that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think there's some good stuff there. And the fun piece, I think, makes a ton of sense. I mean, the you know, the enthusiasm and passion for the topic can and will come through in the email and any other, you know, work leading up to that, and then also the product, the end product as well, versus that person who's, you know, oh man, I forgot I got to do this. Let me, you know, crank out these social posts real quick, or let me send this newsletter really fast, or whatever. It just, the intentionality and thoughtfulness isn't there. And then, you know, as you said, the fun, I think, coming through there as well. So, yeah, I think that's a great, great piece. Anything else, sort of on the topic of high quality content marketing, that you want to touch on before we shift into the last four questions?
You know what? I think the last thing I would add to this is, a lot of the quality KPIs that you can sort of track, I think, really shine through as you continue to engage with your audience or your community. Because mm-hmm. as you continue to engage with people, especially at scale, so like on social media, for instance, or kind of building in some functionalities to your email list where people can reply to you directly and you can reply back, I think all these things, you know, help you develop or strengthen these relationships at scale, helps you keep a pulse on your audience, and over time helps you to identify the things that are high quality or lower quality. Like, you know, if you have some kind of prompt in your email newsletter where you ask people to reply to you, and, you know, if you're doing this regularly and you look back on the past quarter and you see nobody is replying to you ever, mm-hmm. you know, that's a sign that there's something that's not clicking, right?
Right.
Maybe it's like the ideas aren't original, whatever, it could be anything. Or it could be, maybe you are getting replies, and the quality of replies that you're receiving are people who are interested in having a deeper discussion, or mm-hmm. they're contributing from their place of experience and expertise, and you're just having interesting, stimulating conversations with people. It might not be hundreds or thousands of conversations, right? But if you're having dozens of these conversations, I mean, that's a really good indicator that you have an engaged audience, and by extension, that your content is resonating with them, and therefore that it's high quality, at least in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, great points. We often talk about, like, the qualitative side of things, you know, social content and some of those things where, like, you can get a sense of, you know, are the people commenting, are the people that start following you or sending you a connection request or any of that, are they your ICP? Are they like who you envision when you're creating that content? or is it something else? Like for us, you know, we can, some content will be like, great. Like I just got, you know, LinkedIn connection requests from 4 or 5 different VPs of marketing. Awesome. And other times we'll get like a lot of folks who are sort of more SEO practitioners, which is so great. And I think there's, you know, a lot that we talk with about within that. But ultimately, you can kind of get a sense of the qualitative aspect of who's engaging, what's the depth, you know, how is that resonating, that I think adds a lot to it. So shifting into the like last 4 questions we like to ask everybody, you know, the first one just being, I'd love to have you share just a recent success or learning.
A recent success that we've had at SparkToro is, it's really been our office hours program, like the way that we've been able to scale it over time, the way that we've been able to not necessarily do more webinars, but actually do fewer of them and continue to get higher engagement each time. I think that's been a really good win for us. When we first launched this program, we were doing office hours twice a month, like sort of every other week or so. And then as we continued to grow the business, continued to work on other marketing initiatives, we just didn't have as much time for this. And and the time isn't, the time spent, maybe I would even just say the bandwidth spent on a webinar isn't the webinar time, right? It's not the presentation that you make and then the day of, it's all the promotions or email promos and social promos that lead up into that day. So it just sort of became like, well, for each webinar that we do, that means we have to do multiple email promos plus social posts, which of course are all important and necessary, but that combined with all the other stuff in marketing and in the business that we were doing just wasn't really scaling well for us. Like it was taking up a lot of bandwidth and also taking up a lot of our subscribers' time, right? With their bandwidth where we're continually emailing them. So we scaled down to 1 per month and really try to focus on what are the topics that are really interesting to Rand or I, and what are the topics that other people are talking about or that other people are asking us about frequently. And then how do we figure out how to turn that into a compelling presentation? And, you know, I think on a bad day, I think we'll get maybe 600 signups for a webinar. Mm-hmm. But I think as we've kind of focused on doing fewer but higher quality, we've been seeing over 1,000 signups for each webinar now. So,
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for that, for sharing that. So the second question, I think we've probably, because of this topic, I think we've probably, talked about it quite a bit, but, you know, the question, as it stands is, you know, what role does content play in the overall, you know, marketing strategy for your company? And so, like I said, just anything else you would want to add to that we haven't already covered?
Yeah. At first SparkToro, I would say that the content strategy is our marketing strategy. And, you know, I think there are a number of companies like us who have a similar sort of marketing strategy. And I think it probably tends to be driven by marketing leaders like myself who have a deeper expertise and experience in content, right? So you lead with what you know. But where I see this work especially well for companies is where, you know, they're in either a brand new category, like a new category of technology that they're driving. In SparkToro's case, it's audience research, right? So there's no agreed upon term or agreed upon way of going about audience research, right? Yeah. It's learning more about your audience and by extension, improving your marketing efforts. There isn't one codified way of doing that. So for us, I would consider that a new category. Other companies are like this too, right? You have a Gong, right? Mm-hmm. Revenue intelligence, sales intelligence. They were essentially creating a category in that sort of smart listening for calls, right? So that's another example. The other example I would say is the like companies in which there's a lot of competition in that given niche or industry. So I think agencies are really well positioned for this, right?
Yep.
Because any given agency, there are a lot of content agencies or a lot of demand generation agencies. You know, one point of view could be, oh, they're pretty much all the same. Maybe a lot of them are the same, right? Mm. A lot of them are different. And I think that's where content can help the agency or the consultancy stand out as a unique player in this space. So those are sort of the two ways that I would look at it. Like, one, new category, or two, highly competitive niche or industry where you can use content as your key differentiator.
Yeah. I love that. I think we talk a fair amount with companies who are creating a new category, and the biggest piece of advice for a lot of times is really you need to help connect the dots. Like, you understand this, you understand this problem. Like, here's, you know, I'm going to connect the dots now of these things you do understand to what we're now creating, what we're doing to help you understand that. So obviously content being a big part of that. And then yes, anytime on the expertise side, there's no real advantage to having all that hidden behind the wall of an engagement, and really helping people understand how you think about stuff initially, I think is certainly highly compelling. So both great points. I appreciate that. I'm very excited for the next question. Just knowing some, like, my prior conversation with Rand, some of his recent stuff around measurement versus attribution. How does SparkToro define success for you and your team?
So we look at probably the broadest metrics, or not. Yeah, the broadest applicable ones. Like, we definitely pay attention to monthly recurring revenue and annual recurring revenue.
Sure.
We have certain goals around annual recurring revenue. Like, that's kind of it. That's the main metric. That's the one that counts. It's ARR. So that's the biggest marker of success for the business as a whole. And so we make sure that everything we're doing is in service to that. So that's kind of the most clear answer, right? Yeah. But along the way, you know, you can't just look at success once a year, right? Like, how's ARR this year? You know, we track success generally, or maybe I would say across trends in a given way. Mm-hmm. Like, do I look at each email's open rate? Yeah, I do. Does Rand or Casey? Probably not, right? And if we had issues, like, I mean, that's where I would flag things. Like, if I noticed email opens declining over a given time period, like, hey, it's been looking pretty rough the past 3 months. Mm-hmm. Let's regroup. I would flag that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of thing that they would want us to be taking a closer look at. But the nitty gritty of the every single, like, the daily stuff, it doesn't matter as much. We try to zoom out and take a more holistic look at those things.
Yeah. And like we said before, you're not trying to get the perfect attribution model to know, you know, exact weighting of every impact of every office hours or newsletter or anything like that. So
totally. Like, you don't have to know, like, oh, you know, 5% of our customers are converting specifically because of office hours, therefore we should keep doing it. Like,
right.
I don't think any business makes a decision that way, right? But if you're able to understand over time, like, oh, these office hours are causing churn, right? Like, then of course, then you want to regroup on that stuff. But yeah, you'll never get the perfect attribution. And I think most teams that are trying that hard to are just spinning their wheels. And you're better off understanding more broadly what's resonating, what's working, what's not, what's growing and what's not, and then making decisions from there.
Yep, exactly. Lastly, would love to understand, what is your least favorite marketing conversation happening in social channels right now, and why?
I like how specific this question is, because it's least favorite on social channels. That's really specific, so I love it. So that being said, my answer is going to be the chatter about ChatGPT and generative AI on social media specifically, right? Mm-hmm. I think there are some people or companies, I don't know, some people with really smart takes on it that are writing more long form you know, blog posts or newsletters that I think are really interesting and are worthy of reading and paying attention to.
Yep.
But the general high level sort of shallow chatter of it's coming for your job, let's all be scared, I don't think that's interesting, nor do I find it productive. I think because it's an emerging field, right? It's new, a lot of hype around it. It's worthy of paying attention to, but I think it's worthy of paying attention to with deep thought and nuance, not just being like, oh, this is the coolest thing ever and it's going to change everyone's, it's going to blow everyone's minds. Right. I think, sure, okay, but like, what next? So I've muted the conversation on my social channels and I've kind of trusted, like, I think the truly interesting, thoughtful content is going to bubble up in some way. And at that point, I won't be able to avoid it. And then I'll read it and I'll pay attention to it.
I agree. It's still my number one, even with it muted. It still keeps coming up in finding ways. I think it's to tie it all back to what we've talked about today. I would say the most annoying part is just the, sort of the overnight experts is always frustrating, but the folks making a hard shift into like, look, I can create, 500 blog posts in a week using ChatGPT. Just kind of always brings up the, just because you can doesn't mean you should, because certainly there is not the intentionality, quality, and uniqueness of what we really talked about today, that I think misses from that. And we'll, further pollute some of the internet for a while until it shift away from it and revert back to the mean on some of the quality stuff. So, awesome. Thank you so much for joining. For anyone who wants to learn more about you or SparkToro, where should they go?
Yeah, so if anyone wants to learn more about me, I'm most active on LinkedIn and Twitter, and you can find me at Amanda Natt. And my personal website is amandanatt.com, where you can also subscribe to my newsletter, which I send when I have time. So maybe like once or twice a month. But for SparkToro, check us out at sparktoro.com. You can create a free account where you get, I believe, 50 queries per month now. Check out our newsletter and office hours. If you Google SparkToro newsletter or audience research newsletter, we'll come up. Or SparkToro office hours. We do them about once a month, and the next one is coming up in a couple weeks. So keep an eye out.
Yeah, great. And for more info on this podcast or any prior episodes, visit 10speed.io/podcast. And you can like and follow, subscribe on any of the platforms that you prefer. Thanks again for joining, Amanda. This is great.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Nate.